Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Saturday night, and I have to pull a talk out of my hat somewhere. And the usual intention is a few things are swirling in my head. Intention just to offer something that is useful, relevant, real, and direct and honest. And how that will turn out, we will see. But starting off with, some of you may or may not know, I think most of you would know, we just spent the day out driving around, having a look at the piece of land near Cessnock. And to be honest, and I guess a few people ask the question, what's the idea behind it? What's the agenda? I don't know. It just felt over the years like it's the right thing to do. I think the idea of having another hermitage, Buddhist monastery in the Hunter Valley, wine country, it's kind of cool. And you say, well, it's kind of expensive for having a cool idea, Ajahn. I don't know, having been there a few times today, I'm getting a more of a feel for it. It does feel like things are coming together. That is the right place to be, and it will good things will come from it. Sort of spreading the teaching of the Buddha, spreading the teaching of Ajahn Chah, but not in the traditional manner. Obviously, during when we were staying there, there's a few different ideas of what to do with it, retreat center. Leasing it out, helping people stay on it, different ways to help with financing it. But no, I still come back to kind of the Dhamma and the practice. Yeah, I think Buddhism will be spread, the Dhamma will be spread by having community people practice. And we can, practicing here, practicing there, quietly. Don't need to make yourself known, don't need to do too much teaching or any. And that the goodness, the power of the practice, the meditation, keeping good moral conduct, sila, has power on its own, that will grow, and the sweat will grow accordingly. I just trust in that, see what happens. Not a grand plan, it's not my retirement home, certainly. I expect it to be here for many, many years to come. But Buddha Dhamma is my first love, and it'll be always my only love for the moment. I think it's a really beautiful place to be and a place to practice. But we'll see. I mean, well, there's different things. Always there's a few things that condition needs to come together for it to work. So at the moment, I don't have any grand plans about the futures. Maybe a Buddhist village. It's not so bad. Maybe I'm following in the footsteps of my countryman, Thich Nhat Hanh, having a plum village, hunter village or something. It's a retirement home for monks and nuns, practitioners. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it starts out, I think, and then whatever will happen will start from the nucleus of Dhamma, practice. And I think if it works out, yeah, mostly the first few years just camping up there and practicing meditation, not major teaching gig, not major kind of exposing ourselves to the community or anything, but just a quiet, low-key practicing, camping for a few weeks, a week, a few times a year, and see what happens. So that's what's happening today with our day out, driving around. And it's a beautiful drive, so that was kind of very enjoyable. And the only thing, like the other thing that came up in terms of reflection was that, you know, as we're heading towards Vaisakh, the moon is getting very bright. Suddenly there's an energy in the air, feeling uplifted, thinking about, you know, obviously the enlightenment of the Buddha, what he left behind, the blessings of the Buddha, what he left behind for each and every one of us, what he left behind for the whole world. And yeah, like, you know, most of you know, the Buddha didn't set out to be, you know, a spiritual guru or teacher. He set out seeking his own enlightenment. And then when he became enlightened, what he left behind was, you know, an educational system, a training to be done. You know, how to end suffering through understanding, through knowledge, through wisdom. The wisdom. But it takes the training. You have to train yourself. It doesn't come naturally. You want to be happy. You want to be wise. You want to let go. But thinking about it, reading about it, and talking about it, it's not going to get you there. It's a set of instructions. It's like, thing that came up was like, you know, it's the Olympic athlete that we see on TV. It's not the year for Olympics yet, but anyway, something that occurs. Was that, in theory, anybody can, you know, run really quick. You know, they got legs, we got legs. In theory, you have a human body, you can run. But the reason these are Olympians, gold medalists, is that they put in the training year after year after year. The gymnasts, yeah, in theory, we could all do this wonderful backflips. We've got hands and legs, we've got a sense of balance, we've got good health. But those people who are, you know, do those great flips in gymnastics or run super fast, it's because they train, they put in the hours year after year. Yeah, in theory, it can be done with just the body and good health. But in practice, it's very different. There is the tray, there's the technique, there's persistence of training the mind, putting the hours, knowing, you know, the technique of running, relaxing or whatever, pacing yourself, good nutrition, dedication, consistency, year in, year out. Yeah. So the same thing with enlightenment. It doesn't happen by fluke. It doesn't happen, you know, when you just stumble upon it. It happens because there's dedication to training, dedication, consistency. You like it or not, you put it into practice. In a good mood, you practice. And bad mood, you still practice. Practice is not just meditation, but submitting yourself to the monastery rules, submitting yourself to the training, submitting yourself to the wishes of the community. Yeah, so sometimes we do approach the spiritual path as from a standpoint of, because of a conditioning, a bit of kind of a spiritual materialism of gaining. I want to be enlightened. I want to be happy. I want to be a better person. I want to get this and that from meditation. I want to get my jhanas. I want to get my psychic powers or whatever that we approach the practice from. Another getting and wanting. And sometimes it, you know, and because of from that kind of perspective, what's kind of is tinged with the sense of self and wanting, we don't get the result we want. Yeah, sometimes I try people another way to look at it. Maybe it's approach the practice in a sense of giving up, letting go. What can I give up? Maybe I give up my laziness, give up my stubbornness, give up my attachment to sleep or comfort, give up my ideas and, you know, opinions of how things are done. So there's just openness of being with things, openness to taking guidance from others, to learn from others around you. And it's the same, you know, whatever we approach the training, how we approach meditation, this is the same skills. So it's about submitting, surrendering. Surrendering to the present moment, surrendering to the situation, surrendering to the breath. Because you're going to get one pointiness if you learn to let go of everything else. It's not an act of willpower of grabbing the breath, or grabbing your meditation object and placing. But it's through giving up everything else that you have the meditation object. You're giving up your thinking, you're giving up your attachment to the world, your body, your family, your thoughts that you have the breath, you're still giving up. The mind becomes still, not through attaching, not through wanting, not through craving, not through reaching or longing. Yeah. So I think that's the reason why Ajahn Chah set up his monastery the way he did, through excruciating, painful details of what you should do from the minute you get up. Well, you know, morning chanting is at this time, 3:30 in the morning. The bell rings at 3:15. You sit in a certain place. You wear your robe in a certain way. After that, there's an arms round. You clean the sala in a certain way with everybody else. And you go on arms round. It's a way of kind of, a way of just rubbing against yourself. Oh, I don't want to do this right now. I want to do something else. Way of rubbing anything, of ways of seeing how stubborn we can be. Way of giving that up. So it's always kind of, you know, and all great states of mind starts from, yeah, very simple practices of time and place. Know where it is, what time it is, and what should we be doing. And you know, kind of looking to see where 4 to 6 in the morning, we're in the sala, cultivating wakefulness, cultivating clarity. And then after that, it's breakfast. And with breakfast, it's understand, you know, kind of the practice I sometimes kind of encourage people to do is, yeah, instead of eating, getting along with the taste or trying to plan the day out or different things, just simple little practice of, you know, how many times you chew before you swallow? How many mouths would you take before you're full? Just grounding the present moment, grounding the physical act of what we're doing. Still getting drift off to ideas and views and opinions about different aspects of the practice, about the world. But these simple practices that ground our awareness in the present moment brings, you know, a lot of results. If we're persistent, we're consistent with it. But it does take time for us to nurture. It takes an openness, it takes a dedication, which is a rare commodity in the modern world. When everything's so quickly through the internet, through the fact that everything is so available, mobile devices, every one you click on, you get instant gratification, it seems. When we don't get our jhanas in 3 months, we don't want to try another place, another teaching, another tradition, another object. And that's kind of, yeah, that is the drawback of a fast-paced, modern, digital world. That the level of patience is very, very low. With the sticking to it is very, very low. Tolerance of not getting what we want is very low. Because it does feed the delusion that we can control our world. And it's true. I mean, you know, I guess everybody has their own device. You don't watch the news what you're not interested in. Google will give you only the news you're interested in. You don't have to see anything else. Your friends, your Facebook, you only friend people you like. You don't talk to people you don't like. You don't hang out with anybody you don't like. So it's a world exactly how we've tailored the world looks like to our wishes and wants. And that's the delusion. Because it isn't. The world is much bigger than our willpower. And sooner or later we will run into things that we cannot control, that does not end up how we like it. And we'll meet with suffering. And that's the main thing. When we're not ready, we don't understand, then we suffer unnecessarily. And that's the great kind of blessings of the Buddha, the great path. He laid down a kind of training for us to understand and then transcend suffering. What is the gradual path? And it takes effort on our side. It takes a dedication to cultivate a wholesome state of mind, to not be drawn into our habits of things that we like to do, fantasies, our views and opinions that we set up. It takes openness to look around, understand, to learn. But it takes a lot of humility to do that. So we can, you know, we can learn from things around us, learn from our experience. That we don't know. Sometimes people think it's a weakness to admit that they don't know they need help. To live in a society that stresses independence, being strong, kind of stresses, you know, sometimes, yeah, with so much information, it is kind of the drawback of the modern society. The less speech, the delusion, or talking of knowing, that because we read about something, we think we know it. But, sometimes, you know, actual life experience is different than what the book says. Peace is very different from what we read. We may understand peace, but what does that appear? How does that appear in your experience? I think we understand desires and irritation and craving. Well, how does that appear? When it appears in our mind, do we have the mindfulness to watch it, or do we give in to it? That's where the training of restraint is so important. Just because we think about it doesn't mean we should express it in speech. Anything that comes from our mind doesn't have to come out to others. Anything we want to do will show us reflect wisely. But in these days, sometimes it's encouraged, you know, whatever you think, just go for it. What you want to say, just go. With the internet, digital dating, you can date anybody in the world. Sleep with whoever you want. That's just a neighborhood across the world. Get all sorts of interesting ideas and things and experiences. But in the end, yeah, it's just another experience. It comes and goes momentarily, and you're back to your old self again. Confusion, negativity. They want to escape it again by going to another thing. So this is an escaping one sense pleasure to another. But hopefully sometimes, you know, with the training, the ability to just be with an unpleasant thing, or come into a quiet place, meditation center or monastery, it allows us to watch different things that come up, because we're not, you know, distracting ourselves with many things. It allows us to see, where is it that we are suffering unnecessarily? Where is it that we give up to negativity, or negative emotions start to arise? You can see it. And that's the reason why there is such, you know, schedule, the way it's set up, very similar, day in, day out. The people we live with, generally, there is a bit of moving in and out, but generally, somewhat stable. It's only through a stable background that you see the movement of the mind. It's only stable conditions that we see how quickly the mind changes. And through that we can learn. But it's not learning about the world externally. You know, sometimes we're very good at, you know, with Google, the external world. But a lot of us walk around, we don't know this thing that we call ourselves, my mind, the body. We don't learn to look inward. We're just looking outwards to study the world outside. And really, it's the self-knowledge is the highest gift that we can have. And with wisdom, there's no problem left. You think you're really, really wise, then there shouldn't be any problems. But it's, and sometimes I hear that yeah, people think, oh yeah, you know, whatever, nothing matters. I know what I'm doing. I'm equanimous to all things that arise and pass away. But that is the the equanimity of a buffalo. It's not quite the equanimity of an arhat who understands and knows and is still economist. It's just the dullness of not really understanding the world around you, not really understanding who you are and what you are. And this idea, and then there's slight confusion of negativity of not caring. Economist is not caring about the world. I don't like the world anyway, so I don't care about it. It's not quite equanimity. But something that you won't know until you start to have more clarity of mind. You won't know until you start to have a bit the energy, brightness of the mind to see things clearly, to understand. But it takes a bit of trust, a bit of openness, a bit of faith to open yourself to the training, to submit yourself, to surrender yourself to the training and the guidance of a teacher. And yeah, like I said, you know, as an abbot, a teacher here, been doing this for not too long, 8 years. But over that 8 years, I've been trying different things. And it's only recently that I've kind of tried a different tact. And yeah, be more clear, more direct with people when they come. We try the, yes, okay, you know, come in and you can practice and do what your thing and see what happens. Well, to be frank, it hasn't worked very well. But many people come. So I've tried the last few months, my martyrs, this is not a spiritual bed and breakfast. This is the monastery of the Ajahn Chah tradition. We're only selling Ajahn Chah's teaching. We're only telling Ajahn Chah's way of training the mind. And that's true kind of sharpness of the way to do things, sharpness of the core wat, the rules of the monastery, dedication to paying, the details of doing things properly, doing things well, doing things with energy. And yeah, you know, people ask us, well, there are many different ways to become enlightened. Yes, there are many different ways to become enlightened. But I don't know any other ways. And I'm not so interested at the present moment. I'm only selling Ajahn Chah, Thai Forest tradition, in this way. So people are coming here looking. I get some days, you know, oh, I don't really need a teacher. I know what I'm doing. But to be frank, you're in the wrong place. That's not going to work going forward. Yeah. And I see that there's this, you know, it's not the openness to submit, to surrender to the teacher, my instructions, to the way of doing things. Progress is difficult. Progress will be blocked. And yeah, it might be sound, you know, arrogant. It might sound like, you know, a bit overbearing. To say, well, unless you're taking me as a teacher, you can't practice. Well, after 8 years, yes, that's what I'm saying. Unless you take me as a teacher to submit, to surrender to my suggestions, my advice, my pointing out, there's no point wasting your time being here or wasting my time. And yeah, like I said, we try different ways and I just haven't seen it work. So I think going forward, and you see the beauty of people who are, you know, faith arises. And they start to give up the views and opinions, and the mind starts to brighten. There's some talks about kind of psychic powers. You don't need to have psychic powers to know what they're thinking. And I think modern science, I think psychological studies that back this up, nonverbal communication is so much of it. A lot of times we don't say things we want to say because, I don't know, through not wanting to be offend people. But we certainly, body language does not lie. And now they do more research. They say this, and you look at persons and you see clearly facial expression, what they call a micro movement of the facial expression. A happy person gives certain kind of just momentary muscle changes in a certain way. An unhappy person does the same. Feeling of irritation, anger, annoyance. It all shows up in our face. Maybe not even consciously, but it shows up how you move, how you walk. So if you are mindful, you're clear, you look at a person, you know exactly where they're at, whether they're happy, whether they're not, feeling irritated, feeling resentful, rebellious. You can see, you can feel these different people. And you know, there is so much beauty to the training. There's so much kind of there's so much kind of the fruits of the practice. It's literally will blow your mind how much happiness there is, how much sense of fulfillment, how much love and acceptance that's within yourself, really. You learn just to let go. Of what it is that you're attaching to. And you see whatever it is that you're attaching to, views and opinions, sense of self, different things, it's just attaching to suffering, really. But it feels safe because that's what you've been holding on to, the, you know, for so many years. The sense of self, this sense of me and mine, my thoughts, my ideas, my views, my body, my family, my possessions. But once we learn to start, you know, just slowly let go. Immense sense of relief. It is as if you're carrying this heavy bag And you showed that you think it was so precious. Think it's, you know, think carry a bag of solid gold. Well, people aren't so materialistic, so maybe it's not a good example, but selling, you know, carrying a big bag of solid gold, 24 karat, you think it's so precious. But it's still very, very heavy. Right? And then one day something clicked, and you're like, ah, I don't have to do it anymore, I can let go. And you put it in the ground and say, oh my God, relief. Wonderful. Why didn't you do this earlier? Yeah, I don't know. Why don't you do it earlier? And that's part of my job here, to convince you, to, you know, cajole, cajole, inspire, but also to threaten if necessary. Just to get people to learn to let go, to embrace, to accept the teaching, the Dhamma. It's not easy. But like I said, this may be an excuse, but I got this. Certainly there's a precedent in the suttas. Was Ananda was saying, you know, I think the Buddha was talking to Ananda, his attendant. He said, you know, Ananda, I'm like what's the proper word? Pot maker. I take the raw material of clay and sand and blend it together. And then, you know, I spin or whatever it is that you potters do. I do this little nice vases. And then I bake into the sun, right? To firm it up. Have a look. The ugly ones I throw away. The nice one I keep. And I stick them into the oven. I fire it up. Make it very, very hot. To make it stronger. And those that can't stand the fire crack, I throw that out the door. And only those that survive the firing process or hot, I keep. And then I put some glaze on it, and I fire it again. And those that don't crack after the firing, I keep. The rest, I throw away. Right? And then, after that, even after that, what's left, I take them out, the final product. I use a stick. I start hitting them, whacking them. And those that break, I also throw that away. And then, only the best do I keep. Right? So that is the training, right? So many people coming through looking for the training, and we just said, we chant over and he's the trainers, the unsurpassed trainer of those who wish to be trained. Even the Buddha cannot train people who don't wish to be trained. People who don't wish to be trained are the people who think, I know what I'm doing, I don't need a teacher. Well, yeah, if you don't want a training, then yeah, like I say, wrong place, wrong tradition. But, and like I said, you know, kind of been traveling around the last couple of weeks, I've seen, you know, kind of the result of well-practiced, seeing well-practiced monks like Lupo Big, Ajahn Pasano, who's been a monk for 40 years, just sense of well-being, sense of joy, of happiness, of, you know, kind of training others, passing on the wisdom, passing on the training. And it's beauty. You see a community in harmony. See a community that lives together. See a community grounded on harmlessness, grounded in perfect conduct, external conduct. It's a beautiful thing to hold. It brings a lot of happiness, just not to ourselves, but to others around us. I think inspiration for the world. And that's something that's worthwhile. Something that's worth pursuing. But it takes work. And it's a gradual thing. And yeah, I don't know, some people might say, oh, it's a bit of a heavy talk, Ajahn. But no, I think generally just encouragement people just kind of to focus, to really understand, why are you here? Really. And to also, occasionally from time to time, to understand, you know, what's the motivation, why we're doing it. But generally, yeah, no, I'm feeling, you know, very, very blessed to be in this community, to be in this place. You know, beautiful physical environment. And there's, you know, they always talk, you know, sometimes these days and age, people always ask me, oh, are you enlightened yet, Ajahn? You're on your way yet? And the psychic powers, that will really impress us. You have much more disciples yet. Can you show some psychic powers? I think it's the wrong attitude. But I'm not here to impress you guys. You guys are here to impress me if you want to stay. Preferably your dedication, your mindfulness, your integrity, your ability to submit and surrender. And that's where the impression can be, came in. But no, and also the other thing was, no, I think, like I said, in terms of the path, no, there's a lot of happiness and contentment. Yeah, you know, like, you know, if become enlightened in 10 years or 10 lifetime, it's a beautiful path. Buddha said, you know, it's a beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, beautiful in the end. Just walking this path and meet beautiful people, like the wonderful anagarikas that we have, wonderful lay supporters, lay people, wonderful support. And that's the reason why after 8 years, I feel that, yeah, just out of dedication for the generosity, out of dedication for the support we get, that you know, I kind of really focus on the training for myself and others and not really mess around. Yeah, and this is how I see. Maybe I'm, you know, kind of said, maybe I'm going a step too far, but you know, I don't think so. Talking to other people, other monks, yeah, there is no progress unless there is an opening up, humility. There's no progress unless there's no. And the Ajahn Chah tradition is, it's hard to fill up a cup of tea if the tea is really full. It just overflows. So I'm not looking to train people with full cups of teas. Looking people with empty cups, please. So you need to fill them up. So I offer that for your reflection. That are you willing to be here, to submit, to surrender? If not, then why are you here?
Anyway. Sangha.